Hey, this is Rick Caselles from ExercisesForInjuries.com. Today I have another interview for you with an individual that's overcome an injury and utilized exercise to overcome that injury. So I'm going to get, I'm talking with Josh Henkin, and Josh is going to share with us, his story about the injury that he's gone through and what he's done to kind of overcome that injury. So, Josh, I'll get you to kind of introduce yourself and give a little bit of background to the listeners.
Sure. Rick, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share my experiences. Basically, I've been in the strength conditioning industry for a little over 15 years. I went to school at Arizona State for exercise science, so, have sort of a combination of that academia background combined with the experience of working with a host of different populations, everywhere from athletes to a lot of general population of all age groups, anywhere from, 12 years old all the way up into the people well into their 70s. We've been working probably in our own training facility for the past 6 years. And within that, we've really had the opportunity to really develop our own system of working with people and finding out, effective strategies and making people having not only great results, but really positive experiences. And as far as myself, I've been an athlete for most of my life, played basketball for the majority of it competitively all the way up into college. And, along the ways, suffered more than my fair share of injuries. So, I definitely am not a novice when it comes to utilizing exercise to come back from a host of injuries I've had, from everything minor to broken bones and sprains to severe ones such as lumbar disc herniations, a cervical disc fusion. I've had the gamut. And, surprisingly, very few have ever been from actual participation in exercise programs. It's mostly just been through, unfortunate life episodes and sporting endeavors.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, I follow you on Facebook, and I was following your profile, and from your profile, I saw that you had a cervical spinal fusion, and you were, from the pictures, you're doing some pretty crazy exercises like most people that have cervical spinal fusion wouldn't be doing. So maybe you can kind of share with us, your story about, how you injured your neck and your rehab process, the rehab that you've gone through and what you had done yourself when it comes to kind of overcoming that cervical spinal fusion.
Sure. I think a lot of people sometimes mistake, discovering these type of issues as being a single episode type of situation. Most times people forget it's probably been a cumulative effect of different things. A lot of times when I tell people that I've had a cervical fusion, they say, well, what happened if there was one specific incident? Well, that's definitely possible. More than likely, it was just the cumulative effect, like I mentioned, of several different scenarios. One being, during my sports career, I suffered several different head traumas. Some joke that my head looked like the basketball. Just being hit in funny ways, probably set a foundation to having being predisposed to those type of problems. And then, like a lot of people have been through my fair share of car accidents. If you go through those two, which is obviously a very traumatic incident on the neck and head. When I spoke to my neurologist about, could we pinpoint it to one specific event, based upon my situation, and I'll get into that in the particulars, and he said probably unlikely. It was probably just a lot of different things that over time caused it to be problematic. And, the reason I actually end up going to a neurosurgeon period was the fact that, I've been suffering, bad migraines, dizzy spells, was constantly fatigued. Notice decreasing strength in my right arm. To give people some perspective, I could press an 88-pound weight in my right hand for, 15 to 20 repetitions, and it got down to the point where I could barely lift it for one. So over time, I continued to see a decrease in strength, and along with the other factors, eventually my wife, who's a physical therapist, recommended get MRI done just to go sort of see what was going on, because actually, ironically, at the time, at the same time, I've been dealing with some TMJ effects that are actually congenital. We just sort of chalked it up to a lot of that being the problem because we're going to have jaw surgery done, reconstructive. I don't know if it makes me any better looking, but hopefully this is going to make me feel better. And that's when they sort of discovered that one of my cervical discs were compressing about 50% of my spinal cord. So obviously that changed direction quite rapidly, and that had to be addressed pretty immediately. I asked him if that was something we, you know, certainly the only answer. He sold it pretty well, just basically saying, well, you know what, you could probably live your life with it compressing your spinal cord, but, you know, if anything were to happen, again, a car accident or anything like that, or a fall, you could sever your own spinal cord. So that was a pretty good sales pitch into actually getting the fusion done. And, you know, the actual surgery itself, you know, a lot of people would probably assume that the neck is a pretty bad area to get surgery. While it's probably not ideal, it's actually a lot easier than the low back. The recovery rate's a lot faster. I think the biggest thing that was scary when I woke up was just the swelling you get in the neck and the throat area. It makes it kind of hard to breathe initially. The pain was actually pretty tolerable. And, you know, being an athlete for most of my life, I just was itching just to get to the point where I could start exercising again. And, of course, between my wife and the neurosurgeon trying to hold me back, I was just trying to really key into things that allowed me to re-educate, you know, the extremities, specifically the arm, into movement, because, you know, anyone who's gone through such a process knows that you're really limited in the amount of weight you can lift. So it's a good opportunity to start, you know, addressing, you know, neural re-education, coordination of the extremities to work with the spine well again. And they'll sometimes come in very subtle forms of exercise, and you can still do gross exercises to help that as well.
Okay. So like you're saying, it was kind of progressive in nature. Mm-hmm. You went and got a little more investigation done with the MRI, and, you know, you kind of decided with your surgeon that it might be a good idea to kind of go in there and do the surgery. Now, what kind of surgery did they end up doing? Did they end up going through the front or the back of the neck, and do you know what level they worked on?
Yeah, I mean, it's about C5, and now they're trying just to go through the front of the neck. It's actually, again, it's one of those things. You know, even myself, I would have assumed would have been more complicated, but it's actually easier for the surgeons, just because while this sounds kind of disturbing, it makes it a life way easier. They sort of just move everything off to the side, and they're less risk of coming in contact with the spinal cord. So they went to the front, they put in a plate, screws, all that fun stuff in there. And, you know, as far as feeling better, their feeling better part was almost instantaneous once the, you know, initial swelling came down, and just, you know, minor things such as, you know, energy increases or headaches and the migraines and the dizzy spells dissipating were much better. You know, speaking with my neurosurgeon, I was very adamant about being someone who wanted to participate in, you know, athletic endeavors again and being physically active, and he ensured me that, you know, he had worked with a lot of different athletes and military types, and it was actually a relatively common procedure, and I think it's a little scary to hear anyone cutting open your neck, but, you know, fortunately, if you find the right, you know, practitioners, I think it really makes the process a lot easier. And then the recovery process, you know, just actually started very shortly after, and just, you know, with his careful monitoring and making sure that, you know, I wasn't getting overzealous, you know, and things I wanted to do, you know, we were able to take everything in a very progressive manner.
Okay, and it was, you know, so you, you know, you did the surgery, and then, like, did he end up going to physical therapy? Or your wife is a physical therapist, so you just followed her guidance? Or
well, you know, the interesting commentary, I mean, he wasn't too adamant about needing, you know, physical therapy. I think, you know, if you're someone who got the procedure done and didn't know a lot about exercise, it probably wouldn't be a bad idea. You know, something I probably in retrospect would have done more so is gotten more soft tissue massage work through the neck after the surgery, both in the healing process of the scar tissue. And just overall, I think that helps, you know, with the communication of the nerves through the neck to the rest of the body. I think, you know, a lot of times people underestimate the impact of the neck to the rest of the body. And even recently, you know, I sort of got a little bit lazy in getting soft tissue work up in my neck area, and I started developing a little bit of a hip problem. And when my wife went ahead and got and did some manual therapy up in some of the neck musculature and just did some mobilizations, the hips started feeling better. And you know, it's one of those things that it's easy to try to treat the area that hurts and forget the area that was giving you a problem. So, you know, the physical therapy, probably the most helpful thing was, you know, getting the manual therapy and things like that. I think, you know, I knew enough about exercise to go, okay, I know the drills to slowly start re-educating the, you know, arm and so forth and get coordinated and try to focus on the muscles that I wanted to support and make sure that weren't compensating in movement. I think for most people, going through a period of physical therapy would probably be ideal because they do have to get educated upon what really the goal is of their exercise program and the different stages of getting back into being physically active.
Okay, and then you're quite an active guy, like you said, you wanted to keep staying active. So then what was kind of your process to kind of, you know, get back into that exercise side of things? Was it like, what did you initially start doing?
You know, probably there was only two limitations really put on me. The first one was don't run a lot, and which was quite comical because, I'm about 6'4", 250, so I don't have the usual runner's physique, so that wasn't too much of a concern. So I started a lot more like elliptical-based stuff, bike, you know, stationary bike type of things. Even just activities like walking my dogs. And, you know, ironically, it was the activity of walking the dogs that was probably the thing I had to limit the most right after the surgery, because just having that impact of walking was enough just to, you know, after a short duration, I could feel a little irritation up the chain, because I think a lot of people don't appreciate that activities like walking and running do cause a lot of impact, not just to the knees or the ankles, but through the whole chain of the body. So, you know, I spent more time doing aerobic activities that have no impact. The strength training part, I had pretty much a free pass as far as I just couldn't with my upper body lift more than about 20 pounds. And someone who's used to lifting, you know, I've done strongman competitions, you know, 20 pounds isn't even a warm-up weight. So it took a little time to emotionally come to terms with that and just realize it was a short-term recommendation. If I focused on what would be beneficial for myself, I could, you know, come back, you know, in an appropriate manner. And so it was a lot of lower body exercises. And then I did do, you know, integrate upper body work, but it was the, you know, learning, again, how to coordinate the right muscles and to re-educate the arms and shoulders to make sure that the neck would be bearing a grunt of any later work that I would be performing. And that always had to be cognizant of making sure that the technique that I was using was extra good. You know, I was always a big believer in being technically proficient, but really my room for error now was going to be much less in the long run.
Okay. And so you started with, you know, you avoided the impact exercises. You start off with the cardiovascular side of exercises. You're probably cleared to kind of do lower body exercises. You worked on upper body exercises, probably nothing too heavy and nothing over height, you know, overhead.
Nothing overhead for a little while. It was more, you know, if I could give examples, it was, you know, for example, I'd, you know, get into some type of push-up position and work on coordinating the arm, meaning making it move away from the body, or I would use my assistance, predominantly my right arm that was impacted. I would take my left arm off the ground and try to work on some stability patterns. I'd use bands to try to move in different directions and not have the shoulder hike ups, not get that upper trap too active. I'd try to use the supporting muscles that, you know, the rhomboids, the lower trap and lat, to hold, you know, to learn how to hold the shoulder in place so that upper trap wouldn't become overactive and start to irritate the neck.
Okay. So like movement re-education, muscle re-education.
Yeah.
When it came to like using your shoulder, you know, properly and not compensating for your neck. And then how did you end up progressing to start doing some overhead stuff like the photo I saw on Facebook?
Well, yeah, that was very progressive. I mean, what I started doing, even when I was allowed to start going overhead, obviously the recommendation was to start very light. So it was definitely keeping the load down. So what I had to do, and this has sort of been the formation of, you know, part of our training system, inevitably anyways, I've always said that, you know, how we train people has always been impacted upon how we train ourselves to some degree, because we're going to use means ourselves and with our clients that we believe that work. So everything's scalable. But, you know, what I started doing is trying to change, since I couldn't lift a heavy load, I was trying to change, you know, other variables, meaning mostly my stability pattern. So, you know, we're all strongest if we stand, you know, in a typical bilateral position, so our feet are in line with each other. You know, if we push overhead, we're going to be stronger than if we slightly adjust our stance, whether we're staggered or getting to some level lunge position or coming down to the knees. So what I started doing is manipulating my body position so that the stability would be more of a perceived, you know, weight factor than the actual weight of the implement I was using. So what I would do is I'd really get into these unstable patterns, which would force the body to learn really how to coordinate everything together and build that base of stability and strength for myself so that when I could increase the load that was tolerable on my spine, I'd have this great foundation of a really efficient muscular nervous system that would understand how to use the right muscles when we performed all the drills that I wanted to do. So, you know, it's, you know, pressing overhead from a hat, you know, putting one knee on the ground, pressing from a lunge position, pressing, you know, from a host of different postures and positions, and really integrating that with it, still some of the neural reeducation stuff just to complement it, because it wasn't, when you do those type of drills, it's not the typical metabolic fatigue. You're not going to feel tired in the sense of a muscle burn. You're probably going to find that your nervous system fatigues more, which means, you know, your balance starts to go faster, or you just feel kind of drained because your brain works so hard to keep everything working together in those positions.
Okay. And, like, what were your guidelines that you ended up using to know that you did too much that day or you did too little that day?
You know, it's always a fine line because you want to make sure that that you sort of you can gauge pain versus discomfort. So pain was always, you know, anything that would cause me actual pain. It didn't have to be pain in the neck per se. It could have been, you know, the shoulder or something like that. That was, you know, too uncomfortable or upsetting, or, you know, fortunately I sort of knew where to go within the exercise itself, meaning that I think a lot of people aren't cognizant of what they're doing when they're actually performing each repetition. And when you go through an injury like this, you become really in tune with, you know, what is happening during each repetition. So I can start to things start to compensate. If I started using my upper traps too much, or if I started leveraging myself in a wrong position, and I would just terminate the exercise for the day then. So I always try to use technique as a gauge of when to end an exercise or even a workout, because I just knew I wasn't going to be able to maintain that form. I was going to compensate and probably lead to some discomfort. You know, things like, you know, saying was I excessively tired the next couple of days. You know, that's always a good sign. You know, if you're completely exhausted when you're about to start your next training program or your next workout, or the last thing in the world you seem like you want to do is hit another training session, then you may need an extra day to recover or rejuvenate. And then, you know, we try to keep on the modalities, doing things like, you know, stim on the neck or the shoulder area, you know, some soft tissue work. So, you know, I've been pretty fortunate overall. I haven't had any setbacks. I think a lot of that, you know, contrary to what my wife may believe, I've been pretty adamant about making sure that I didn't go too much too fast. You know, she's been kind of shocked at how fast my recovery's been, but, you know, I always told her that, you know, it's a lot to do with just taking things systematically and being consistent with them. And, you know, I think that makes a long difference in the long run, and really being in tune with what each exercise and repetition is trying to accomplish.
Okay. And then when you start, like, what did you find the most challenging thing when it came to the process of recovering?
I think patience. You know, you want to get back to what you enjoy doing and you're used to doing. You know, if you're not into exercise, you know, it would have been very easy for me just to get, you know, a little bit lazy with keeping up with the treatments and, you know, being adamant about doing the exercises. But the fact of the matter is I wanted to get back to doing what I was used to being normal, and I knew normal would also change. And so that was a little bit of getting used to that, you know, where how much I could push myself in certain exercises was going to be limited to some degree by the injury. But for the most part, I was going to be able to focus upon things I really enjoyed. And, you know, so it was more of a patience game, just going, you know, I know this isn't the most exciting exercise I've done. This isn't the usual dynamic stuff that I'm accustomed to. But I understand that the short term was going to pay off in the long term. So it was mostly that, and, you know, probably the just, you know, come to terms with that your athlete, you know, your program's going to change forever was a challenge too. But the exciting part was I was able to sort of mold that into finding new ways to stimulate my body, and what that's done is help us create I think, a better system for our clients and a more diverse system, because I think a lot of exercise programs, you know, we're either focused on adding more weight or more reps. And a lot of times, especially for those that are coming back from injury, those can actually be contraindicated ways of progressing. You know, you can make progress initially on adding weight for a little bit, but for someone like myself, you know, who has a restriction of adding weight, you know, I couldn't really add weight to a lot of the exercises. I'd have to add what we call complexity to the movement, meaning I'd have to try to create other ways of having load on my body than just, you know, adding more weight to the bar or the dumbbell or the kettlebell or the sandbag. So that's what allowed us to sort of come up with some creative ways, you know, innovate new exercises that allowed people to go through longer progressions before load and repetition were the only standards of which people could improve by.
Okay. And then now, like, what are things that you can't do or that you, you know, you avoid?
No, I don't put any weights on my back, meaning, like, I don't do a barbell back squat. I don't put a barbell on my back. And that's been kind of actually a very eye-opening experience, just because, you know, in the past, as I've gotten involved in strength sports, you know, that's kind of a standard of which people to judge their strength by. And I've been able to find new means and new ways that don't aggravate my body that will help my strength and my fitness. Going overhead always has to be a very, you know, deliberate, progressive manner. You know, the picture that you were referring to was I was putting up a 97-pound kettlebell overhead. I probably wouldn't do that on a regular basis, but, you know, and just because still, I mean, 5 months out of surgery, you know, there's still a lot of, you know, neural reeducation scarring that, you know, probably needs to be done. But the fact of the matter is I did that primarily just to prove to people that, you know, you can reestablish your strength levels without focusing just purely on the weight that you're lifting. And, you know, before that period, I hadn't lifted really anything over probably 50-pound weight overhead. And so it just reconfirmed to me that the system we were utilizing and the exercises we were placing emphasis on were really creating some exciting results, because I think most people had the preconception that they're going to have to hurt first and have to hurt for a while. And that rarely should be the case. If you're accurately identifying the problem areas and the right exercise, that you should feel progressively better and better. I was a little bit sore after doing that, but, you know, so I just learned that I really wasn't ready to do that type of loading yet. So, you know, doing anything heavy overhead right now is something I still have to work on. And, you know, my wife always brings me back to a principle that I always espouse to other fitness professionals and coaches when I'm giving seminars, is you always just have to weigh out the risk versus reward. You know, you have to weigh out, you know, what is the benefit, and is there a better way for me doing that, or is there another way for me to accomplish the same goal without causing a problem? You know, if the risks really outweigh the reward, you really have to question if the exercise or the program is right for you. It's not necessarily that's a bad exercise or a bad program, but we lose the sight of the individuality of it. And that's probably a governing rule that a lot of us in the industry have to consider when we are prescribing our exercise programs to people.
Okay. And I mean, any lapse or any advice for, you know, someone that's overcoming an injury, and doesn't necessarily need to have to be with the neck, but, you know, any advice for someone that's overcoming an injury?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, having overcome a number of them myself, I think the number one rule you need to do is learn patience. But I think patience is also geared by setting, you know, really meaningful goals for yourself. If you're not someone who enjoys being really physically active, I think you have to identify things that are meaningful for you, whether it's being able to play with your kids without pain, being able to, you know, I'll give you a specific example. I had a 70-year-old gentleman come to me, and he was having a total hip replacement. Now, this is not a gentleman that cared about, you know, whether or not he was going to be able to bench 400 pounds or deadlift 500 pounds. He just wanted to be able to play golf again. And actually, you know, the more meaningful part was, his wife said to me, well, Josh, who's going to put on his socks? And meaning that she was concerned because she had been told that he would never be able to cross his leg over again. And she thought for the rest of their lives that she was going to have to put on his socks. So for him, believe it or not, one of the most exciting things that he ever did was when he had a look under his bed one day, he was able to get down to it. You know, for him, you know, the goal was to get on the golf course, to be able to put on his socks. And that, you know, people forget how much independence that gives someone. And when you're not able to do those things, how much of your life feels taken away from you. So, you know, for me, it was getting back into doing things I love, and that was exercise and specific movements. For other people, it's probably going to be a very different thing. And having that goal in mind allows you to sort of measure your progress. So you can sort of reverse engineer those goals, meaning that in order to, for me, to press overhead, I knew I was going to have to do A, B, and C. So you could break down those goals in a lot more incremental levels so that you can learn patience by focusing on shorter-term goals rather than the bigger picture, because I think we all tend to be a little impatient with our progress. And I think also, too, you know, it's probably more than likely that we're all going to face a setback here and there. And I'm always, you know, fascinated to hear my wife talk about different patients she deals with, because she deals with everything from people that with dementia and stroke to athletes. And so, you know, there's definitely ups and downs to each scenario and each situation. And, you know, you just sort of have to take things in stride and realize that everything's a learning experience. And when those instances do occur that, you know, try to understand why they happen. And sometimes, gosh darn it, they just happen because it's a bad day, and try to get back on track. I compare it similarly to people that are trying to, you know, lose weight or something like that, where, you know, if they have a bad day eating, instead of letting it spiral out of control, just get right back and rejuvenate yourself by really focusing upon that motivation and focusing on the things you have done well, and realize that you are on the right track, and to overcome those little obstacles along the way.
That's really good information. Now, any, you know, last minute points that you want to leave with people?
You know, I think if you're recovering from an injury and you don't feel comfortable in your own rehab, and even if you are, I always think it's good to set out another, you know, set of eyes. So for myself, I didn't, you know, actually consult a couple other colleagues of mine just to get some different ideas, because I think we can always get stuck in our own head, and, you know, and those of us in the profession can think we always know best. But, you know, sometimes it's good to get some other ideas and people that have had success with that specific injury. If you're not someone that does know how to rehab yourself, I think, you know, finding someone that you feel very confident, comfortable with and working along with you is really, really important, because it can be very frustrating doing it yourself. There's a lot of important things that make it, you know, there's a lot, I should say, subtle things that make a big difference. So if you're not someone that, you know, is comfortable in rehab yourself, I think it's important to go ahead and try to find professionals that even specialize in things that you've done. You know, when I consult other colleagues, I always try to find people that have either worked with people in a similar situation I'm going through, or I've gone through themselves, because I want to hear what their experiences are, you know, the triumphs and tribulations they've had in going through those injuries, and so that hopefully I can learn from experiences that they've had and sort of try to implement that myself. Overall, you're going to have your own experience, but I think, you know, even working with someone else it also gives you a nice comfort level, because you're going to have to rely on other people. As independent as most of us are, there's going to be times that we don't feel our best and we don't feel like doing maybe the things we have to do, or we feel a little defeated. So I think having even that emotional support is really a critical thing, and feeling as though we're making progress towards what is most meaningful to ourselves.
Awesome. Awesome. And where can people get more information about you, Josh?
Our primary website is HenkinFitnessSystems.com. So it's H-E-N-K-I-N, fitness with, and then there's another S, systems.com. People will probably find out that we run a sandbag program, and the sandbag was something I did integrate into my training, and we have a very systemized formula for integrating that for a lot of the things I talked about, stability, strength, conditioning. It's a really user-friendly tool, so for those that maybe are nursing, you know, small injuries or have those chronic aches and pains, they might find a really strong benefit in the principles that our program allows for. And then, you know, we have a Facebook fan page that people can jump on, ask questions, and a blog that people can see a lot of our videos and information, and hopefully find something that strikes a chord with them.
Awesome. Thank you very much for your time, Josh, and sharing your story. And we will talk to you soon, or we'll see you on Facebook.
My pleasure, Rick. I appreciate the opportunity.